Hello, listeners. This is Joe Simpson again with Marooners Rock for another session of Review Tubers, a interview podcast kind of thing that focuses in on talking to YouTubers who specialize in doing review-based videos. This is content that I, as an individual, specifically like to watch on YouTube, and so I'd like to shine a light on that little wonderful corner of the YouTube-verse by interviewing people about their channels and hopefully giving them a little bit more exposure because they deserve far more attention than they get right now, and I think they put a lot of work into their videos, and they deserve some recognition for that. Joining me today is the mind behind the channel, Super Derek RPGs, who specializes in RPG-based content. Say hello.
Hey, everybody. Hey, yeah, I'm Super Derek, and I review RPGs on YouTube, just like he said. How are you guys doing? Well, I guess you can't respond.
Well, you'll hear it on Twitter or whatever. So I came across your channel, I think it was after I had watched a Space Hamster video, one of your videos, because the game he reviewed was a JRPG. And so one of your videos popped up as a suggested video. So I hit it in my watch later, and I think a month later I finally watched it, and then subscribed after watching a couple more videos. That's kind of like how I became a fan of yours. I would say that one of your standout features is just the really in-depth look and critical eye on the RPG genre. What are some of the challenges that you come across doing an RPG-based channel, particularly with doing very time-consuming, content? Because to establish your opinions and your critical eye, you have to finish you have to play through an RPG, which we all know is intense.
Yeah, that is definitely a challenge that came with reviewing RPGs. And so one of the things that makes it difficult for me specifically is that I basically will not review an RPG until I've finished it, which means not only do I just have to play a little bit to get a feel for it, but the thing about RPGs is that they're very story intensive, and they're very, it's a lot more like a book than just like watching a movie. And that, if you're going to read a movie review, you can rest assured that the person who has reviewed the movie has watched it from start to finish, right? But with larger mediums that take so long to review and consume, sometimes you can't always feel like that person actually sat down and played it from start to finish. And if a book has a really terrible ending, but with really long form media where the story is so important, you got to make sure that the person who is talking about it knows if there's a terrible ending that ruins the game, or if there's some weird mechanic that they introduce in the late game that just gets really unbalanced, or something to that effect. Or at least that was my mentality when I started this about 5 years ago. So in order to address that, I was like, well, if no one else is going to do this, then I will play them from start to finish. And, time management is one of the real challenges that comes with that, because a lot of these games, some of them are mercifully short. Some of them are like Codelka, which is like maybe 15 hours. But some of the classics on the Super Nintendo are closer to 25, 27, sometimes 30 or 40. And then sometimes you get behemoths that take over 80 hours plus an epilogue that lasts another 20 hours, like Persona 3. And finding a way to manage that time is just very difficult, especially for the majority of this time. I've had a full-time job that I've also been balancing. I've got a wife, and just that, I think that's the biggest challenge, is just the time management of it. In fact, I spent like an entire 3 hours this morning working on a schedule for me to try to follow to help alleviate some of the haphazard way in which I've been doing it up to this point.
I feel like that's a pretty, pretty well established answer. Kind of going off of that, are there, like, looking back and seeing how you've done things throughout the history of your channel, are there things that you would go back and change about how you did a specific review or a process that you went about? Like, what are some things you've learned that would be for anyone out there who's listening, who's interested in maybe doing some RPG reviews, even written? What are some tips that you would give them that you've learned through your years of experience doing this consistently?
Gosh, when you ask that question, it makes me feel a little bad because I don't feel like I've learned all that much over these years. I'm still figuring it out, or at least it feels that way.
Well, because I'm in the middle of actually writing my Ni No Kuni 2 review, and I'm, you know, oh, like 25 hours in, and I'm still meeting primary characters, and I'm like, I can't write the review if I'm still meeting main characters. So I'm just like,
exactly,
like setting aside the time to, like, it's a wonderful game. I'm really, really enjoying it. And
level 5 is great.
Yeah. And they, you know, they built this wonderful world that's just so rich and full that, like, I would love to have written the review by now, but I feel like I can't write the comprehensive review for a consumer until I've, pushed through a majority of the game and at least finished the main story. And thankfully, the publishing company who sent it was very understanding because they sent it to me, and then a week later, I was in Boston for PAX East. So there was like a week where I wasn't able to play it at all. And then, balancing that with, a couple different jobs and freelancing and things like that. So it's just been kind of like, and then 3 weeks later I got Pillars of Eternity 2 to review. So right now I'm juggling two massive RPGs, trying to get those reviews done. So I was really hoping you'd give me some tips, but apparently it's just put in the time.
well, luckily one of the things that, that I've had the luck, of stumbling upon, at least for me, that works really well is, I have an attention span that is just apparently pretty rock solid because I can just play a single game for very long sittings, like sometimes up to 8 hours a day. Not usually, but sometimes I'll go up to 8 hours a day. Sometimes I can play that same game and nothing else for an entire month, and that's how I get through them. And I feel like if I had tried to split my time, it's easy to get lost between RPGs, like between switching back and forth. It's like, okay, well, I'm playing this game and then I go over and play this game for 12 hours and they go back to the other game and where the heck am I? I don't know. I would always lose track. So you spend a good hour at the beginning of every play session trying to remember where you were and what you need to do next. So that's something that luckily I learned early on in my life and has kind of stuck with me. So it's been less of an issue over time. So one of the other things, I guess, that that I had the dumb luck of stumbling into is the fact, actually, this is probably something I would have changed about the way I did things when I started. My channel actually did not start off as an RPG reviews channel. It actually started off as a show about just collecting video games and playing games that I enjoyed and like, oh, here's a game that I have and I really like it. And, you know, here's some stuff about it. But as it turned out, over the course of 5, 10, 15 episodes, all I was talking about were RPGs. So I just kind of accidentally reviewed nothing but RPGs. And it's like, well, after, 20 episodes, I can't just go and here's a top-down shooter. But if I were to do something differently, it would probably be to start with a clearer vision of what I actually wanted to do with the channel. That way I would have some branding already established that matches RPGs a little closer than just something like the Game Collection, which is just the name of my main flagship review show. So I guess that would be my recommendation for those getting into reviewing RPGs is to have a clear vision to start with about what you want to bring to the table, and don't feel too don't feel restricted by that. Feel free to explore your space. And that's something that I'm still learning to do and like come into my space as a JRPG video creator.
Fair enough. Kind of back to commenting on what you were saying before about being able to play a game just like that. You recently did an Earthbound 24-hour stream. Now, I know I was only able to tune in for a couple of portions for a little bit at a time. Did you actually go like from start to finish, or was there breaks?
I did. I did take, you know, short breaks to, use the restroom and things like that. But otherwise, it was basically I might take a 5-minute break to get up and stretch, get some blood flowing. But otherwise, start to finish, it actually ended in 20, I think just about 20 hours. Okay. I was able to get through the game in that amount of time. So, and honestly, I could have probably have kept on going. I was pretty tired by the end, but I wasn't tired of Earthbound. But that may speak to the quality of the game more so than my own, ambition. I don't know.
Yeah, that is a wonderful game. It's still one that I'm making my way through. My attention span is probably the opposite of yours. I'm very easily distracted, so I'll get 20 to 30 hours into a game and something new will come out and be like, ooh, I got it. I'll pop this in for a couple hours just to see what it's like and then move back. And then I never go back. So I just have this backlog of games that I need to finish. And I do eventually finish them. It just take like 6 months will go by before I touch a game again. Particularly with, writing for a site, when I'm given review copies of games to review, the pressure to play those games and for the review is a lot higher than the games that I'm playing for fun. So a lot of the games that I've on my personal list kind of get pushed aside while I play these other games. Luckily, I usually get copies of some really great games, so there's no complaints there. But I look at my backlog sometimes. I'm like, man, I really need to go back and finish that game at some point. But I still got 20 hours left on this other game I'm playing. So it's definitely a balancing act. And then also being a work-at-home parent, my nearly 4-year-old daughter is a big distraction. And sometimes I have to give up control of the TV over to her mind so that I can get other work done. But it's, it's all like this big balancing act. And
gotta love the Nintendo Switch for that, though, right?
If I had one, sure.
Because then you could surrender the television, pick up your game console, and walk to the other room.
Which I can technically do on the Wii U when I'm at home, but it's that doesn't work for game. Like most of my games are on PC and PS4 these days. So I should probably set up the play. Sony has
the
new application for
the streaming
your console to your PC.
That up. And you can also do that with the PlayStation TV if you have that. The PS TV that consoleized Vita. Played Persona 4 for a long while when I had to be away from home.
Yeah, I don't have that.
Persona 5, I mean.
What are some things you love and hate about current RPGs?
Love and hate about current RPGs. The thing about current RPGs that's difficult is you can never find them secondhand. I'm a notorious cheapskate, and that's one of the reasons that I like to buy retros, because you can sometimes get them at a thrift shop for maybe $10 if you get really lucky. But getting modern games on the cheap is very it's very difficult to do. And I guess I honestly haven't had very many bad experiences with modern RPGs. But then again, most of the RPGs I've been playing over the last 5 years have been pretty retro. We've been digging some more modern stuff, though, on the Switch and the PlayStation 4. So aside from just picking up inexpensive copies of modern games, I guess the one of the things that I'm not really happy with modern games is the tendency or the way they seem to lean toward more fan servicey sort of character models. I guess I can just say it that way. It seems like a lot of them seem to just try to get a little too. I don't know. They're going after that early teen boy market, I think, you know, and yeah. It's just not something that appeals to me very, very well. Also, I guess one of the other things with modern RPGs, they tend to try that is also something that's kind of started to bug me a little bit. I remember on the Super Nintendo and PlayStation, when you would go out into the world map, you would have a large map to explore and you would have continents that you could go to. And if you were able to tell that that wasn't like a literal interpretation of the world around you, that was like it was symbolic of your character wandering across an entire continent and interesting locations along the way. Whereas modern day RPGs, it seems like they want to try to create a seemingly one-to-one scale of the world map to your character. And as a result, not only do they have to try to find ways to fill this large world that they've created and somehow find a way to make that meaningful and worthwhile, but also it seems like it makes the world feel smaller in a weird kind of way.
Yeah, it seems to have the opposite effect of, I think, what they're intending. They're like, well, if we scale everything up to match the size of the characters, the world will open up and be bigger. But we want that... We want the world to feel bigger than our characters.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if the world...
And the irony is that it felt bigger when you would make your characters bigger on the world map. That's the strange irony. But yeah, I agree 100% with what you're saying there. It feels like the world is getting smaller and shrinking as they try to make it bigger.
Well, I think it's like because of our perspective, when you fly somewhere, the world open, like you can see the world and everything is tiny. And so when you're at that perspective, if your character is bigger on screen, it's a representation of them traveling a long distance. That's like the perspective changes from there. Some games I think have really like successfully done the one-to-one scale while still feeling like a huge world. Like if you could travel to another continent in Breath of the Wild, that would be insane because the space that you're given feels massive as it is. But you know, imagine if DLC came out that added a whole nother like continent for you to go like check out.
That would be pretty insane.
I think that would be where like these RPGs should be shooting for in terms of their scale. And, you know, just the sheer number of gameplay options for exploring that world open it up too. It feels bigger because you're able to explore the various levels of a location. You can go to the base of the mountain, but you can also probably get to the top of that mountain. And I think a lot of RPGs don't allow that. You are basically walking from between battles or between story points. And that's the only thing that exploration tends to feel like in an RPG. I think you mentioned in a review that I watched recently, you'd be walking, or a cutscene would be over, and you'd walk across a room and get another cutscene. Like, why didn't you just make the cutscene of them walking across the room to continue the cutscene that was already there? Why is my gameplay experience walking across the room to activate a second cutscene? And like RPGs are notorious for that sort of thing. You're simply walking between cutscenes or story beats, and that's not gameplay. That's an interactive storybook. With some combat elements or combat gameplay sprinkled in between.
And speaking of combat, something I've noticed is that a lot of modern RPGs, a lot of them are moving away from turn-based battles, which is something that is a little distressing. I'm glad to see that, you know, Dragon Quest 11 is still going to be turn-based, but it looks like, I mean, obviously Final Fantasy 15 was already much more action-oriented in the way that combat takes place. The Xeno series that started off with Xenogears, that was turn-based, and then you know, the newest releases are also very much action-oriented.
Yeah.
If not a little MMO style, in a way.
Yeah, with like the action cooldowns and waiting for them to be open again. That's definitely that MMO kind of feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
Even Ni No Kuni 2 is definitely more action, and yet I'm not sure what the difference is, but for some reason Ni No Kuni 2 pulls it off in a way that still really feels like a classic JRPG, even though it is 100% action, to the point that you even have you can dodge attacks and block and do all sorts of different things, but it still definitely feels like, maybe it's the aesthetic, I don't know, but
I don't know. I haven't played Ni No Kuni 2 yet, but I definitely want to, and that's just and it's okay to have action RPGs. I love action RPGs. That's not what I'm getting at, I don't think, but it seems like turn-based is drying up, I think.
Yeah, there's definitely, it's a different feel when you can like going back classic to like Chrono Trigger, or you like even Final Fantasy VII, when you discover the trick that's needed to beat a boss, like, oh, using a lightning attack causes weakness or does extra damage than other attacks, and discovering that and feeling like you're outsmarting the game or outsmarting your opponent versus outskilling an opponent. They're very different feels.
Yeah, that's exactly a great way to put it. Outskilling versus outsmarting. And that's something that, like you said, in older RPGs, like sometimes the final boss would have you up against the ropes and you'd be like counting like, okay, how much math can I do in a moment? Let's see, if I can heal everybody with this one attack and then I cast haste on this other person that gives them more turns, they can use this other thing before the enemy gets a turn to attack. And it's like trying to do all this like mental chess about like who can set up preparations in turn in time to you know, give you a chance against this thing that would like one hit kill your entire party otherwise, right?
Yeah.
Whereas with action RPGs, it's different because you can't really strategize to that fine a degree. You can definitely be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna, you know, dodge around and use this lightning based attack, like you said. But you can't be like, well, I'm gonna cast. Well, I don't know. It probably depends a lot on the game, but
yeah, it really does. I think like, there's also, you know, a disconnect with party control in a more action game. In a turn-based game, mm-hmm. you control every character's action. In an action game, the rest of your party is kind of up to their own devices. However, if a game allows you to program them, you can kind of coordinate what they do in certain scenarios. But your only real connection to those characters is through the lens of the main character in that situation. And, you know, maybe that's where Ni No Kuni 2, I think, gets it, is that you're able to switch out the party members however you want and switch between them on the fly. So you really do get to be in each character's shoes and feel how they participate in a battle. Whereas in other games, you don't get that control, and you're basically stuck with the character that they give you. Which, if it's a great character, isn't a big deal, but not everyone likes the same characters. One more question about games, and then I'm going to kind of dig into you and your channel a little bit. Not dig in, but like, get some, like, have you talk about that. Are you a fan of tabletop RPGs?
Like pen and pencil, or pen and paper type of, like D&D?
Dungeons and Dragons, Star Wars, or any of those classic, or even
more modern? I didn't used to be, but about a year ago, one of my coworkers, actually, he told me that he used to DM, and I'm like, oh, that's really cool. I've heard a little bit about this. And I actually wanted to give it a go because that's basically the roots of not only CRPGs, but also JRPGs as well, just like down the chain. So I wanted to give it a shot. And so my wife and I and the co-worker's wife and he, and we also have a couple of mutual friends. We all get together basically every Sunday and play for like 6 hours. And we're currently going through Ravenloft, I think, that expansion with like the Curse of Strahd. So we're currently going through that, and I'm having a real good time with it. But
do you have any plans to do video content centered around tabletop at all?
Currently, no. Just because it would require an investment from not only myself, but also from everybody else who's involved in that kind of game. It would take a whole lot of additional production value that I'm not already familiar with making. Contemplated trying to start something up online with like Johnny Millennium and stuff like that, and that would be super cool, but I don't think I have the skill to do it and the resources to do it at this time. Maybe sometime down the line, because I am a huge fan of like Critical Role, if you're familiar with them from Geek and Sundry, and something like that would be so much fun to do. But like I said, it would require a huge commitment from all parties involved, and getting that from people who don't already do YouTube stuff is probably a really difficult thing to do.
Yeah, that's understandable. I guess I was thinking more like, would you like go through a book and like talk about like how a game, like how the gameplay is structured or anything like that?
I don't know. I feel like I'm too new to the genre to really say anything, to be any sort of authority on it. Like RPGs I've been playing my entire life, but tabletop is something that I have only just started stepping into over the course of the last year or so. And that I feel like I wouldn't know what to look for or what to talk about. And so I think that I'll probably leave that for other people, at least for now, until I feel a little more immersed into that sort of gameplay.
How would you describe your own channel? How would you describe Super Derek RPGs?
Super Derek RPGs is a channel where I talk about games that I love, games that I've played, some games that I didn't really love, and that's something that I'm also still kind of exploring my space on. I've recently started trying to talk about trailers that have come out for upcoming games that have really interested me, and other discussion videos. Like the other day I put out one about games that I'm excited for 2018 and beyond, and I'm still kind of exploring my space on that. But basically it's all about the love of RPGs. I guess that's what it just comes down to, is the love of RPGs and trying to be pretty relaxed about it, like not screaming in your face about how crazy I am.
It's
about
your boy
RPGs.
Super Derek here with your hit me
Make
with
sure
the
to
face
like,
with another
smash
RPG.
That like button, hit that bell.
I'm here to slap you across the face with another RPG.
Yeah. You know, I like to think that when I'm talking to the camera that I'm talking to like a friend, you know, and I don't want to just scream at my friend and be all weird and out of control. That's just not me.
I think that's why YouTube is such a successful platform, in just the way that the content creators approach content, is it's a very intimate space. Most people, I think, watch YouTube by themselves versus TV or movies, where they will might watch with a family member or, in a theater full of people. There's, a lot of YouTubers are speaking to the camera, which feels like you're speaking directly to the audience. And so people, I think, really connect with their content creators that they like. That, you know, there's also an insane amount of access to the creators themselves through, you know, the social media aspect of things, and also YouTube comment section, being able to instantly communicate my opinion to a creator. It's insane, and it doesn't exist anywhere else. And so I think it creates, it definitely creates a community centered around a specific genre of like type of video or content or even creator. Once their channel gets to a certain size. And it's very interesting from a sociological perspective to watch an audience interact with the central figure of a YouTube channel, because when I go to the movie theater, I don't get to send a comment straight to Brad Pitt about his performance in X movie.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I can put my opinion online, but there's a slim chance that he will ever read it or care. Whereas if I leave an opinion on Super Derek RPGs, you will likely get a notification that a comment was left, and you will at least, at the very least, glance at it because a notification popped up. Whether or not you reply or respond or react to it in any way is different. But I like the audience knows that you are getting these messages, and it's unlike anything out there before. So
believe it or not, on the subject of that, YouTube is changing more than just like your subscription feeds. It's also changing the notifications that I receive, which is kind of frustrating, because over the past like couple of months, I've noticed that I'll go back into one of my videos because I got a notification, and then I'll sort by like new, and there'll be a whole bunch of new comments that I never saw. And
that's
just really strange.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of breaking that connection a little bit, but on like new videos that I'm putting out, definitely I'm always going through and trying to respond to as many comments as I can, at least as many questions as I can, if nothing else.
Yeah. So how does a lifelong love for RPG contents translate or become a, like, you know, lots of people love and play RPGs, but not many create YouTube channels centered around, like, so how did you go from a game lover to a content creator? Like, how did that transition happen?
That's an interesting question. Essentially, for a long while there, before I started my own YouTube channel, I didn't have cable. I only had the internet, and Netflix was a little weak, and so was Hulu, and if it even existed at the time. So things to watch on the internet were pretty much restricted to just YouTube. So almost all of my content that I consumed was watching people like Pro Jared, the Angry Video Game Nerd, the Happy Console Gamer, and other channels like that. And I was like trying to find an RPG reviews channel, and I couldn't find one. So I was like, well, that's weird. I hope someone comes up with one soon. So fast forward a while longer, and I was like looking at trying to find a creative outlet for myself. I like to think I'm a pretty creative individual, and I had a technical support job, a very soul crushing technical support job, and I had no creative outlet. And the idea occurred to me, is like, well, I guess I could like try this YouTube thing. And I was like, no, the weird thing about that was I was like hesitant about it. It's like, why, how could I do YouTube? You don't know how to edit videos. You don't know how to present anything on camera. And I was like, well, what is it that separates people like the Pro Jareds of the world from people like me? And I thought about it, because I wanted to solve that question. And the only real answer to that question was starting and doing it. Because when like Pro Jared started, he probably sucked at least a little bit. And I sucked a lot when I started. but I got better. I like to think, at least. And I feel better about the content that I'm producing now. And so I just started. I basically grabbed a very cheap tripod from Monoprice. I got this little adapter on eBay that would hold my phone for me on a tripod. And in my first several videos, I recorded on an iPad with a little lavalier microphone that I still use to this day. Had that hooked up to an iPad to record the audio, and gradually I just figured it out. Later on, I used a Guitar Hero microphone for all of my voiceover, and that stuck with me until about a year ago, when I got like a Blue Snowball, and then I eventually upgraded to the system that you're hearing today, which I think sounds a little better than a Guitar Hero mic.
Nonsense. There's no you peaked years ago, apparently. Well, that kind of answers the other question I had about if you learned to shoot and edit beforehand, or is it something you've learned along the way? And so it sounds like you're just like, this is something I want to do, and you just kind of went for it.
Yeah, and about 5 years ago, there was actually very little information out there about how to go about starting, because at that time, a lot of content on YouTube was, I mean, there was Pro Jared, and there was other stuff like Screw Attack, but YouTube was mostly like cat videos and not very much like produced content, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's still, our perspective is a little skewed because that's the world that we're in. That's the content that we want. But you go to trending, mm-hmm. and it's music videos and whatever silly video is trending right now. And then you'll see a few like really well-known content creators scattered throughout produce content. But mm-hmm. I think a large majority of it is still the you know, I captured some America's Funniest Videos still.
Oh yeah.
Kind of vibe where it's just whatever silly video is trending and mm-hmm. going viral at the moment. But because my subscription feed is almost exclusively produced content, I forget. I'm like, wow, YouTube's really come a long way. And then I look at trending videos. I'm like, oh, never mind. It's still all this.
But what there is now, there are videos of people who are showing you how to do it. And when I was looking 5 years ago, that was very, it was a lot harder to come across solid information. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when you started, what were you kind of, it sounds like it started out as you kind of just wanting this creative outlet, something, a hobby to do that allowed you to put something out there for people to see, and creating the mm-hmm. content that you were hoping to find so that someone else who was looking for the same thing was finding it. Did you ever expect, like, I guess where you're at now, did you expect to be at this point?
To be completely honest, I thought YouTube was going to be super easy. I was like, going to put out a video and then it just instantly get all these views and subscribers. I thought it was going to be so much easier than it was. That didn't last very long. But so when I first started, yes, I did think so. And then about a month into it, I was like, never. Maybe someday I'll get 1,000 subscribers. Maybe. And, you know, that was that was a bit of a rude awakening. Because getting new viewers on YouTube is not very easy at all.
You had a clear, like, you, there was something you wanted, something you realized, and you realized you had to be the one to put it out there and kind of start it. Because it seems like pretty since much. Then, a few other RPG-based channels have popped up.
Yeah. I mean, I think that some of them existed before my channel as well. They were just difficult to find. But yeah, it's definitely a growing community of RPG reviewers out there. You know, I'm pretty good friends with one of them, Daria, from Daria Plays RPGs.
Yeah, I'm familiar.
And I recently was actually talking to Mike from Dark Pixel Gaming, who's also a very successful RPG reviews channel that you know, that. It's just like, man, where were all these people when I was bored, you know, 7 years ago?
But if they were there, would you have started?
You know, I'm not sure. I know, I mean, knowing what I know now, yes, I would have. Because as it turns out, I feel like it's not just about finding out about the games. Like people don't watch just to find out like, oh, what is Xenogears about? They sometimes will watch just because they want to hear what I think about Xenogears. And like, you know, and then they'll go on to watch another Xenogears review by Dark Pixel Gaming or by somebody else. And it's not always just about, you know, it's not competitive, I don't think. You're not competing with other people. It's a community, and you are contributing to that by participating. It's something that that I'm still gradually getting my mind wrapped around, is the fact that YouTube is a social network. It's a social platform. And when I got into it several years ago, it didn't feel like that. At least I didn't realize that it was. It was much more of a media platform, a platform where you consume videos, you watch videos, and some people produce videos. But it is very social because there's a huge community behind the people who watch your videos. There's a huge community of video creators who support each other. And that's one of the best ways to find growth within YouTube, is to collaborate with fellow content creators. And that's something that I'm still, like I said, still wrapping my mind around. It's a very collaborative process, and it's a community that, you know, I'm really glad to be a part of.
Yeah, that kind of ties into what we were talking about earlier with it's an intimate space watching YouTube, mm-hmm. and the access to the creators. And you were saying people tune in to watch specifically your opinion on a game. And I think reviewing in general, even written reviews, have become very personality based. The reviewers that I watch for, like, there's reviewers that I watch, people that I watch for entertainment, and then there's people that I watch for their opinion on a game or read, because of I find that I more often than not agree or understand with what they're saying. And mm-hmm. so before I buy a game, I might check in to their, like, their overall score and their main points, just to, like, okay, based off of the fact that I've pretty much agreed with this person's previous reviews, there's a good chance that I will also like or dislike this game based off of their review of this game too.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that's the direction that a lot of this kind of content is heading. And it's whether or not you can, I guess, hit the right timing to hit the trend of which personalities are standing out and which styles of videos are appealing to an audience. And the audience's willingness to share content is also huge, because I honestly find that to be the most difficult part of doing YouTube, is I don't have a problem creating the content. I love creating the content. That's the best part. The difficult part is convincing people to spend 5 seconds to hit share. It's literally one of the easiest things for someone to do, and convincing someone to do it is very difficult, but they will share 1,000 memes a day, but they won't share content that they like from a creator. And so it's just an interesting mindset that people will have around it.
Yeah. It's interesting. Somebody on YouTube tends to stay on YouTube. And this is something that I've run into before with even trying to give away free t-shirts and stuff. It's like, well, all you got to do is go over to this Facebook page and click like, and, you know, leave a comment or something. And sometimes people just leaving YouTube on two reasons. There's probably some, like, people don't want to leave YouTube for one. And also, YouTube doesn't like when people leave YouTube, so it'll actually hurt your SEO. But yeah, just clicking like the share button, something like that. Yeah.
Well, even like, you know, sharing on, like, I'll create a link on Facebook and share that mm-hmm. to convince people to share a Facebook link on Facebook itself, not even leaving YouTube, even retweeting a tweet with a link to a video on it is is proving to be difficult. And it, I'm like, I see you, like, I see friends of mine, not to call out any of my friends. I love all of them so much, but to see them, tweet out or, share like 1,000 memes, silly memes.
Yeah.
And then not to share a friend's hard worked video. I'm just like, come on, guys.
come on, Jake. Why aren't you sharing any videos, Jake?
Well, luckily I don't really have any friends named Jake. Fingers crossed, okay. I hope, because someone, one of my friend named Jake is going to listen to this and be like, you jerk.
You forgot I exist. Oh my God. You're the worst friend. That's why I don't share your videos.
Yeah, apparently.
No.
What are some video games that you're actively playing these days?
Well, currently playing through Shining Force on the Sega Genesis. And also, I've been playing a little bit of Ease 8. And then next, I'm going to be playing through Final Fantasy Mystic Quest. It's kind of a strange selection of games.
Do you recommend those games? Or do we have to watch a future video to find out?
So, like, I can't really base a recommendation on them until I know how they end, though, right?
Fair.
Like, that's kind of coming back to what we... Because I don't want to make a recommendation.
You, you should totally having, play this game, and then it turns into a turn. Are you having fun with them in the place that you are at so far?
Yes. Yes, I am. I'm having a really good time, and I'm really looking forward to Final Fantasy Mystic Quest. And in all seriousness, it's actually a pretty fun game, even though it may not necessarily be the most mentally stimulating of games.
and then we're almost done with kind of what I had. And feel free to want to move on. I can edit this out. But you recently hit a bit of a hardship your job situation. Like, how's that been impacting you? And then, like, how do you see this impacting your channel? Like, what's your mindset moving forward?
Well, it definitely came as a bit of a surprise, to have been laid off. So when that happened, I was lucky enough to have already had a vacation scheduled for my wife and I when we went to Cannon Beach, Oregon, and we had a really good time there, and that was a good opportunity for me to kind of reassess my my situation without feeling like I was trapped at home and, you know, and all of that. So the way that that's affected me since then has been, I mean, I'm producing more content than I was before, because at the end of the day, there's only so many jobs that you can apply to in a given day. You know, there are only so many new jobs posted every day. And once you've applied to them all, what have you got to fill the rest of your day?
Yeah. Well, also that job hunting is a very mind numbing, breaking experience.
Oh,
you can burn out very quickly on that process.
Yeah. Job applications, these days, it used to be, you just take a resume, fill out an application, you know, hand it in, in person, you know, ask for a callback number or something. And then that was how you applied for jobs, you know, back in my day.
You had to apply for jobs, you know, uphill both ways.
Exactly. But now it's just like, okay, well, you have a resume. That's great. Go ahead and attach that. Oh, by the way, we're going to have you retype everything that's on your resume into these predefined fields for you. And none of that is auto-completable.
Yeah.
And then
on top of that, the number of places that will have like the 50 question survey of tricky questions, situation questions that you need to answer.
It's basically very anti-applicant at, you know, I feel like everything has been kind of skewed. You know, some things are like anti-consumer. Well, applications today are very anti-applicant. It's like they're screwing everybody over before getting employment or giving employment opportunities. And most of the time, you're not even going to have your application looked at by anything other than a computer program that scans for keywords.
Yeah.
So
the frustrating part about that is you could answer a couple of questions wrong and the all the everything you've done is just thrown in the garbage because it doesn't meet the the quota or the specifications that it needs. Your application needs to meet because of all that. And then they'll throw that questionnaire at the end of the application process.
Of course.
So you know, after you've done all the work already.
Yeah. So yeah, that's so there's only so much of that someone can take in a day. So I've been using this as an opportunity to expand upon the channel, stream all of my video gameplay much more often, and I think I told you this morning I spent a good like 2 or 3 hours working on a schedule for my daily workload, and basically it is from, you know, 8 a.m. until 11 p.m. every day. Scheduled out so that I'm spending like something like maybe 70 hours a week working on the channel, and then like spending a few more hours a week with my wife and like hanging out. it's difficult, but it's paying off in dividends pretty well so far with you know, my recent collaborations with Johnny and Wood, where I've just in the last month I've grown about like 25%, which is fantastic.
That's really awesome.
Yeah. So
like with this recent, like, I guess, you know, definitely major change in your life, how did that impact like your current goals?
You know, it's interesting. I decided that, that after being let go from that company, I'm very tired of the tech industry at this point. It's very tiring to think of going back, and at some point I probably will. You know, I'm just hoping right now to maybe change goals into switching into more of a creative field overall. And I am still applying for tech jobs and stuff, just because I gotta apply for something. But it's kind of like a race for me, where I'm racing against myself. What am I gonna, you know, what am I going to accomplish first? Getting a new job out of all of this, or am I going to be switching into full-time YouTube? Is this going to be something sustainable? Because if it's the latter, that would be amazing. As of right now,
well, that's the dream for all of us.
Yeah, as of right now, it's definitely not sustainable. But if, you know, if I'm growing 25% every month, that might be feasible eventually.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's kind of a breakneck pace, though. So we'll just have to see.
Well, you know, for me, even me this summer, there's a high school student who doesn't live very far away from me who is super interested in doing video production. So we brought them on as an intern for the channel for the summer. And so my goal for the summer is to just utilize that extra hands-on experience to, one, give them experience and to learn to see if this is a career field that they generally want to be a part of, but then also to create as much content as possible while I have access to that. So like this summer is going to be a lot of focus on my channel as well. So I'm definitely feeling you on the like, okay, this is my like timeline. Except your timeline is like really super like, you don't, it's very abstract because you could get a call tomorrow for an interview for a job.
Oh yeah.
Which
I could.
Which would change, you know, a lot of things for that schedule you just spent 3 hours making.
Yeah, you're not wrong. So it's definitely something that I'm going to be playing by ear. It's a very loose schedule. It's very tentative, but I know for a fact that if I'm going to be more successful in making YouTube happen as a full-time thing, I'm going to need a more consistent, reliable release schedule. And I think a more consistent release schedule will result in a more consistent viewership of that.
Absolutely. Content. I think anyone who I've ever talked to about YouTube consistent see and regular content is the key to building an audience. I, you know, my biggest struggle is, you know, balancing multiple jobs and family with producing content. So basically I produce content when I can. You know, I get 2-3 episodes of the show out a year. It, you know, I still love doing it, but it's not a very fast way to build an audience.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's you taking advantage of the time you have while you have it is a great way to invest in while you wait for your next, you know, income driven life change, with a new job or with substantial subscriber growth or whatever that looks like. Now is the time, and it's awesome to see you kind of bouncing back and being like, you know, there's definitely some stuff I can do right now. Sitting around, you know, delving into my own mind about it all day long is not the option I want to go with. And it's really encouraging. Exactly. It's encouraging and inspiring watching you kind of like, well, I'm going to just do what I love doing and see what happens. So that's super cool.
Yeah, the worst thing that'll happen is I'll have a good time.
Yeah. So that, you know, that's kind of how I look at it too, is even in job application, like I'll apply for jobs that I don't necessarily qualify for, but mm-hmm. I'm close enough where I'm just like, eh. But in my mind, I'm also thinking the worst that can happen is they don't hire me and I'm exactly where I am right now, which isn't bad.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
It doesn't hurt. Like I'm not actively hurt by being rejected, which is a much better mindset than be feeling defeated out of it. Like I don't lose progress. But finally, the entire purpose of this podcast is, or this interview series or whatever we're going to call it, is to bring more attention to this corner of the YouTube universe. And, you know, not only through these interviews, but what are some other creators out there that you enjoy watching that you would recommend others to go check out? You know, one of the big things that I want to do is to help grow not just the individuals that I'm interviewing, but everyone within the community. If we can point them to those in those directions, that would be awesome.
Yeah, some of the channels that that I really enjoy watching that I feel that also need some more recognition would definitely be like Daria Plays RPGs, who is somebody that I mentioned earlier on the stream, and also Jimmy Hoppe from Import Gaming for the Win, or Import Gaming FTW. He reviews and talks about games that that we never got in the United States, and not just games that like got fan translations that, you know, anybody could do. He's talking about games that that basically they're still in Japan, and we never really got them officially or unofficially or otherwise. And he's definitely a channel that it's very unique because he speaks Japanese, he can read Japanese, and he's actually recently done a video, or I guess recently it was last year, he did a video on an unreleased in the United States Suikoden game that has no fan translation. And because of that, and we're big fans of Suikoden, and because of that, he actually made a video where he detailed the events of the game. He basically stopped short of doing his own fan translation on it. It's like a half hour video. It's like a half hour long video where he just goes into, here's what happened, here's who the characters are, these are the events, and kind of gives you a, maybe not a replacement experience for the game, but at least you'll be up to speed and know exactly what that last PSP Suikoden game was. And he does that for other games as well. Like a lot of the Ganbare Goemon games, like which you guys might know as like the Mystical Ninja from Nintendo 64, but there's a series of videos that we just never got. So that's another channel that I would also recommend everybody who's listening to check out.
All right, awesome. So to wrap this up, do you have any of your own videos that you'd recommend, or videos that you have made that you really enjoy, that you either are proud of that you made, or stand out to you in your game collection?
Oh, well, so one of the games that I really loved the most, there's actually two games that I can say are some of my favorite games that I've reviewed. Now, as to whether or not I feel like my review has held up to this day, maybe not so much, but I really loved reviewing Terranigma for Super Nintendo. That's a game that was actually left in Europe. We didn't get that one in the States. It's an action RPG. It's tons of fun. And also Grandia for the PlayStation 1. Now, that's a game we did get, but it's still kind of a game that not very many people seem to know very much about. And I feel like it is every bit as wonderful and fun as like the best Final Fantasies on the PlayStation. And it's definitely worth checking out.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much. This has been Joe with Marooners Rock for the ReviewTuber series, joined by Super Derek RPGs. Thank you so much, Super Derek, for joining us today. Go check out his channel.
Thank you for having me.
Go check out his recommendations. Have a great day.